I'm Colin Ellis, and for 30 years I was a permanent employee of other people's cultures. What I wanted to know more than anything else during that time was how to create a great culture myself. So I wrote a book called Culture Fix, which is the world's first how-to guide for building great workplace culture. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get industry leaders from around the world to expand on the ideas I wrote about in the book and to get them to share actionable things that you can do to create a great place to work yourself. And remember, listening is good, but action is better. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Culture Makers podcast. I'm delighted today to be joined by Matt Defina, who is an organizational psychologist and is currently head of programs at the Man Cave based in Australia. He seeks to have a positive impact not only on the people around him and the cultures that he's part of, but also on the world as well. He is focused on being able to contribute to the creation of workplaces in which employees are healthy and productive and understanding how to expand that outside the organization too. And he joins me now. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Hello, Colin, and hello to everyone that's listening as well. Thanks for having me on.
Matt, fascinating career. Just so many places that I could just jump in and start. So much experience, including a stint in the UK that I noticed as well. But it looks like I mentioned that you're an organizational psychologist. It looks like that was kind of the thing. That's something you studied at university, right, here in Melbourne. And that was that always going to be your pathway, you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I never quite knew at the time, did I? And when I went to the UK, I was just looking to explore and sort of see what I was interested in and passionate about. When I came back, that's when I started studying psychology, and I knew I was interested in that area, but definitely not clinical psychology. I always was interested in strengths and how we bring out the best in people, and was honestly at that stage trying to work out where I fit into the world as well. I was volunteering for Oak Tree Foundation, which is a not-for-profit in Melbourne. I was working for World Vision. I was even DJing in nightclubs and playing state hockey in Victoria and Australia. And I was just not all over the shop necessarily, but just trying to find all the different threads and how they came together. And eventually I found a subject called positive communities and organizations. And that was honestly the turning point, where I was in a room with, you know, professors that started to talk about how we create positive environments, positive cultures, organizations, communities that bring out people's best, based on the assumption that we are good at our very deepest and most natural. And that's what brought me alive. And so my systems brain started going crazy. It just felt like I'd found my people. And that was when I went, okay, I think organizational psychology is the way that I want to equip myself to have an impact in the world. From that point forwards, it was then a journey of discovery to Man Cave, but that took a few more years.
It's something that I was talking about recently with a friend, this whole concept of you really finding something that lights you up. I'll be honest with you, I was a bit skeptical about the whole thing, but it's because I haven't found the thing. So I'd hear people talk about it and I was like, oh, just one day, I just realized, I'm like, yes. And then I found the thing and I'm like, oh my God, it's true. Who knew? You know, when I kind of hear you talk about that, you're trying different things. Certainly early in our careers, it's not a career at that stage, but we are trying to find a pathway, right? We want to become part of something that's bigger than ourselves, but we don't necessarily know what that is. And I'm assuming that's something you talk about in psychology as well.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's one of those funny questions that a lot of young people get asked, as you just said, or not even young people, just everyone in life, is what you care about. And I think we did a really valuable exercise early on in my studies, where we looked at all the organizations we'd worked at and how challenged we were at those organizations, and then also what we learned from them. And one of the things that I then picked up on a theme was, it's really important to me to be in physical environments that are really full of light and full of nature. And I used that when I was 21 to then decide which cafes I was going to go work in. And so the cafes in my area, I'm like, great, that cafe has lots of natural light. It's in a nice street. I want to work there and the vibe is good. But then I use that same idea, then go into the next organization and start to get clear on what are my deal breakers and deal makers in terms of who I want to be around. And the thing early on that was two most important things I think that came out psychologically was, I cared about who I was working for directly. What could I learn off that leader? And then I also gradually became more and more important to me that the organization I was working for was positively impacting the world as well. Mm-hmm. And so even if I was doing work that was challenging and enriching and I loved it, if the organization wasn't making the world a better place, then I was really struggling to have purpose. And so that was the journey I went on in terms of like that purpose concept. And honestly, a lot of the answers for me came from slowing down. A lot of the answers came from exploring and doing lots of things and then slowing down enough to be able to hear what I really wanted to do. And then that came up against all of the conditioning that I've had, all of the communities and environments that I've existed in where, you know, it's more common for people from my sort of background to go down a white collar path, and to go and do some of the things that I've done is a bit unusual. And I sort of ignored that for a while. And it's only in the last few years I've gone, oh no, I can't ignore that anymore. Or a part of me is just going to die slowly as I ignore it more and more. And I think that's the part of, I've called it the inconvenient truth of listening to spirit, is it then comes up against all of these life choices that have been made from years gone by. And I think anyone at any point in life is going to get to that point of friction. It just so happens that I've had a few of those in the last 5 or 10 years.
Couple of things I want to pick up on there, because the world has changed. Some of that I talk a lot about in my speeches is the world has changed and people need to catch up. The world isn't going to change back to the way it was before, and we can go, oh, thank God we're all command and control and being told what to do now. Purpose is one of those things that organizations never used to talk about, you know. Mm-hmm. And certainly post global financial crisis, you know, there was a definite shift away from this greed is good mentality to one more as like, okay, well, what are you doing that's good in the world? And so I think those organizations, exactly as you say, they kind of put that purpose out there. They put their values out there. You used to have to work in an organization for at least 6 months to figure it out. And then you were like, I was sold a dud here at interview. whereas now, you know, I think we should be, you know, employees should be looking at, is an organization doing good in the world? Not only that, what do they stand for? What are their values? Are they living it in plain sight? Which is something that we do a lot of now, which means that, yeah, and the Deloitte Millennial Survey found that people nowadays are considering purpose as important as pay. And that's certainly true of you, by the sounds of it, is you kind of always looked for that natural light. Great metaphor, right? In terms of working for organizations that you felt you had a strong connection to.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it was also, just to pick on something you said, organizations and societies evolved to wanting more transparency. Even if we look at advertising now, we call BS on advertising really quickly because we're so much more attuned to it. And I think we also expect the same of our leaders, where, you know, we expect them to be authentic and real and to show their values and not to kind of hide things from us. And I just remember, I think it was around 24, 25, it was quite a forming stage where I was going into more psych studies. I was going into my Instagram feed. This is going to sound a little bit trite, but I was going into my Instagram feed and I was going, I don't really enjoy what I'm seeing on here. And then I had this realization that, hang on a sec, I can unfollow people. Hang on, I can curate my Instagram feed to be whatever I want. And also, what would it feel like if I was posting the same content on all my social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, to name three, and I didn't have to worry about showing up differently in those different parts of my life? And I just remember the relief that washed over me at that point. And then to think, okay, so how do I then find organizations and leaders that think the same way? Where, you know, the short stint I did at PwC, I was really impressed by how transparent it did feel there. And the values were really clear. And I think they did dial up definitely the purpose of the organization as well, because people my age were really keen on that. But it's also really that really liberating feeling of realizing that you don't have to keep those multiple masks and faces up in different areas. I think, as you said, it's an expectation now, but it can also be, you know, the liberational coast also is a bit scary because then there's less places to hide as well. I also remember finding out about social enterprises and thinking, oh my God, how amazing would it be to have an organization that exists purely for the social good? And then I started to find out about a number of those in Melbourne. And it was amazing to then connect with the communities that were behind them and to realize there were people thinking that same way as well.
Yeah, one of the questions I asked as part of the podcast, and I always ask it at the end, Matt, is kind of, how do you keep yourself relevant, your ongoing relevance? And for me, it sounds like you've got this kind of innate curiosity where you're consistently looking, and I'm assuming you carry this into your work, consistently looking for ways that you can enhance the lives of others, where you can enhance the way that things occur such that you're doing good. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a real curiosity. I was definitely one of those kids that was always asking why 100 times and driving my parents crazy. I think for me, it's definitely a curiosity without attachment. And so I'm not using curiosity to try and test or make sure that my belief systems are true so I can create safety in my world and there feel good. It's like, I'm just genuinely curious. I want to learn about how people work, how cultures work, how do we make things better? And it's never about me. It's always about the bigger picture as well. And yeah, I think that's definitely a driving factor as well. And just to see what's possible, the seeing what's possible, the what if is another big thing that keeps me awake at night thinking about the next adventure.
Yeah, which is very much the, you know, kind of a growth mindset, you know. And I said there was two things. The second thing that you mentioned, which, you know, again, really resonated with me, is this sense that you believe that people are innately good. I think often when I look at some of these workplace cultures, they think the worst of people. And then, of course, if you think the worst of people, you're never going to be disappointed, right? So yeah. Presumably that's something in your work, and, you know, especially in your work at the Man Cave right now, where you're looking for opportunities to bring out the best.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that came back to the genesis of working with boys and recognizing that a lot of the work that was already out there for men and for teenage boys was about how do we fix them, or how do we look after them at the crisis end of where they're struggling, and how can we get back to the prevention end and approach it from a way that actually enrolls men in wanting to be part of this work, especially boys, and approaching it in a way that focuses on their strengths and the possibilities and the opportunities. Because when we talk about that stuff, even the feeling in our body changes to feeling of expansion and excitement. And so I think within Man Cave, there's kind of a parallel story, I feel. There's the work we do with the boys, but then that's always been a further reflection of what we want to make sure the organization is aligned with as well. And then the facilitators that also run the programs. And so much of that comes back to, we believe you're good. We need to create the right environment so that you can be your best. And if you stuff up, we're not going to judge you. We're actually just here to help you get back on the horse and keep going. And honestly, like, for some people, that can be quite a confronting space to be in for the first time, because they're so used to being in environments where they're having to fend for themselves, protect themselves, and then they're in an environment where it's fully safe. And it takes a lot of time for someone to learn to trust that. But I think, yeah, focusing that innate goodness and then going from there. If we go into schools and, you know, typically a teacher will say to us, oh, he's the class clown or the class bully. The first place we ever want to run a workshop at 7 years ago, they voted a boy in the classroom as the school's biggest bully, that they actually had a competition. And without a doubt, almost every time, that bully ends up being the biggest leader in the room. And it's just that he's been put in a box by teachers because he's inconvenient. And maybe he's having challenges at home, or maybe he's actually disengaged with school for different reasons. And it just takes one person to see the good in him and the potential in him for him to step into that possibility. And so that then, ideally, we carry that into our workplace as well, and the way that we work, not just within Man Cave, but the way that we work with everyone.
It's a really great point. For those of you who don't know much about the Man Cave, it's really focused on facilitating healthy masculinity, I think you would say. Matt, for boys, young men, you know, and as a father of a 15-year-old boy who's trying to find his own way right now, you know, and as his dad, I'm trying to not repeat the mistakes that my dad made. Not that he would ever admit to any. Dad, if you're listening to my kid, my dad's never listening to a podcast. It's to really help him better understand himself, rather than telling him to pull himself together and pick a trade and get into work, right? It is to help him to understand what it means to be a teenager and grow. But I think, you know, and using what you just said there, is there's a lot that often within our cultures we don't understand about each other, and we're not very good at helping each other. And so I like that kind of distinction. You talked about boys and men and the work that you do, but also trying to replicate that in your culture as well. And, you know, reading about Man Cave's culture, which I did about, I don't know, 6-8 weeks ago, something like that. And there's one thing that specifically stuck out for me, and that's where you said that culture isn't an idea, it's a practice. You know, it's something that's living and breathing. Can you give us a sense of kind of some of the things that you do to keep, you know, kind of maintaining that sense of safety and also connection between people, Matt?
Yeah, definitely. I would say, so we're in the gifted position that we built our cultural framework off the back of an amazing culture that the founders really intentionally built. Now what we've brought in is, so we'll have daily check-ins, and that's a simple tool we use in our workshops, but we also use it for all of us. And so at 9:30 a.m. every morning, the whole week, the whole year, there's a Zoom call for anyone that's working that day to come for half an hour. It's hosted by a different staff member each day. And it's just, it can be framed in lots of different ways, but basically it's, how are you today? and that you just have a chance for 1 to 2 minutes to talk openly about how you are. No one's allowed to interrupt you. No one's allowed to give you advice or rescue you. They can offer support or they can ask questions. And you start by saying, Matt, checking in. And think of it like walking up to, you know, an airport and checking in your baggage for the flight. And then you finish by saying, checked in. And what that then enables you to do is go, I'm able to communicate how I feel today. People know where I'm at. They don't need to rescue me or save me, but at least they know, hey, I'm amazing. I've got extra capacity. Give it to me. Or, hey, I'm actually going through some tough stuff at home today. I just need you to be a bit, you know, a bit more gentle. And what we've seen is that's built that natural connection between the team, but it's also built much stronger relationships as people have started to understand each other's personal lives. And off the back of that, we'll also do often clearings and honorings, which are two other tools. And really simply, a clearing is there something between you and I that's stopping us from being really effective in our relationship together? And it's just an opportunity for me to say, hey, Colin, I just want to clear with you that I'm sorry I was 2 minutes late to this call. And the impact it has on you is that you were waiting for me. And next time I'll make sure I'm on time. And it just means that the relationships, it's a relationship hygiene, is caught before it drifts. And the third one, I'll pause after this because there's a few big ones here, but they're the three sort of key ones for us, is an honoring. And an honoring is, I would say, you know, in especially in Australian culture, but even in British culture as well, is actually is challenging. It's a chance to just honor unique spirit and strengths and skills that you see in another person. We'll typically do this on someone's birthday, and we'll also do this when they leave the organization and when they join the organization. And it's a key part of how we work with boys effectively, but also a key part of just being human. And all it involves is me saying, hey, Colin, I just want to acknowledge or honor the fact that I can just see you have so much spark and zest in you. And it makes me excited to be talking about this stuff. So thank you. And they can be just short as that, or they can be minutes, or even we've done them for an hour or so before as well. So I think those three tools are things that we use on a daily and weekly basis that mean our culture and our people connect in a way that's much deeper than just working together.
It's such a great shirt, Matt. I guarantee people will be listening to this podcast and they'll be like, oh yeah, check in Monday morning. Yeah, we do that. Yeah, tick that box. And then as soon as you talking about what it is, they're like, yeah, no, we don't do that. What we do is we go around in a semicircle and talk about the work that we've got to do. Like, that's the immediate thing for most people in most cultures is 9 o'clock. Let's talk about work rather than 9 o'clock. Let's just check in and see how everybody is, you know. And that's that maintenance of vibrancy. That's that maintenance of safety to go, hey, that's okay. It's okay to talk about how you feel. You know, one of the things that I talk about is when I started work in the mid 80s, a long, long time ago, like feelings, you could not talk about your feelings. It wasn't a thing like emotional intelligence. That was all seen as fluffy stuff. You know, it was about some middle-aged bloke in a blue suit telling you what to do, but you couldn't tell him how you feel. And so you create in that safety, I think it's fabulous. The other thing that I'll say is clearings. I think it's a genius idea. So for anyone who's listening, that's an idea you should copy straight away. Rather than sending everyone on a courageous conversations course, giving them a pamphlet and then them never doing it, is really encourage conversation. But obviously it's built on a platform of safety. And I'm assuming, Matt, you're always looking at ways and things that you can do to continually evolve the culture.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as we've all experienced COVID, like literally the whole world has experienced COVID. We've been through our own challenge of, you know, how do we keep the culture going during lockdowns last year? And then how do we powerfully bring everyone back to the office as well? So even just really simple things is not amazing at all, but just Tuesday lunches where everyone brings a plate of food and we sit down and we actually connect. And that's a chance for us to have a lunch and learn. And we had one of our staff members just yesterday talk about motherhood. She's a mum to two teenage boys. And we just learned from her what it's like to be a mum. And, you know, a few weeks ago, we had something similar or along the same lines. But that won't be unusual to your listeners, I don't think. I think some of the areas that we are trying to step up in is, you know, I think about how the blurred lines we've talked about and the professional personal boundaries can be really liberating, but also quite challenging to manage. And so I look at it as an expansion of how society is operating now, and an organization is just a reflection of that. Mm-hmm. And things are just more integrated. And so we're trying to work with, you know, within our cultural framework is three values, which is care first and foremost, psychological safety, challenge, which is all about growth and asking people to step up. And then in the, between that, there's choice, which is you, no matter what, you get to choose what you need right now in this point in time. And the key thing we're driving right now in our culture is just people taking responsibility for their choices. And it comes back to clearing. It's actually just about someone taking responsibility without shaming or judging themselves or making themselves small so they can move on with their work. Yeah. And I guess the next challenge for us is going to be, how do we scale this?
Yeah.
And that's really what we're leaning into, is we're building out educator training for adults. We're building out social media platforms for teenage boys on TikTok and Instagram. Is how do we scale this so more people can get involved in it and can pick it up and run with it in their own communities? And I think that's probably going to be the next challenge for us as well.
So the lunch and learn, that might not be new to people, but, you know, lunch and learn where you learn from a staff member about something that they're going through possibly will be, again, often they're seen as educational. Not that that's wrong, but I just think there's so much we can learn from each other. How much of a role does organizational psychology play within workplace culture, Matt? Do you feel, I guess, in your opinion? And you know, what could organizations do to better leverage the insights that they would gain from that?
Yeah, well, I think, so organizational psychology as a concept for me operates at three different levels, which is simply, how does an individual feel in an organization? How do they work in a team? And how does the organization function overall? And what are the different systems and processes you've got in place to enable culture, capability, strategy, and high performance all to meet in the middle to then achieve your goals as a group? And so I think there's a lot to learn in terms of, I especially think the onboarding experience for staff is really important. And what we've tried to do is make sure that their onboarding experience is not a one-way street of, hey, here's all about Man Cave and here's why you're working for us, but also why do you want to be here? How do you want to contribute? What are your dreams, goals, and aspirations for being here? Hey, what do you want to do next after Man Cave? How do we enable that for you as well? And have that conversation at the start. And looking at the life cycle of an employee, which is an org site principle, but you know, any really good HR professional would be thinking the same way. And then really it comes down to what I think is distilling down the key frameworks. And you would have seen a lot of different frameworks from all your different conversations, but the ones that we look at is culturally, how are you showing up against the behaviors that we've agreed to? And if that's not happening, what coaching needs to happen or conversation needs to happen? Capability wise, what skills, knowledge, and experiences do you need to be the best for Man Cave? And strategically, where are we going and how are we going to get there? Old metaphor, but we use it all the time, is the bus. Say we need to get the right people on the bus in the right seats, and then we need to work out where the bus is going. But we know where we're trying to get to, but then we need to work out, strategically speaking, how we're going to get there. And I think a lot of these concepts from an organizational psychology perspective is just tapping back into what we need as humans within an environment. And a lot of that comes back to that psychological safety, belonging, and purpose. Is, do I feel safe here? And safety is not to be mixed up with comfort, which is, you know, I'm comfortable, no one's pushing me or challenging me, and I don't have to do anything I'm not happy about. Safety is actually, can we talk about the thing that's happening right now and know that we're going to be able to get through it together? And anyone that's worked for a manager that knows that there's not going to be implications for sharing something or that they're going to navigate it together knows what safety feels like through really volatile environments. And for some people, they haven't experienced safety in lots of parts of their lives. So actually creating that in an organization where you spend a third of your life or a third of your, you know, working life, I think is really important. The belonging piece is then, what are we here to do together? And so we'll come together once a quarter and we'll have a town hall. And that town hall will involve, you know, we talked about the morning check-in. We'll have a two-hour whole organization check in one big circle. We'll have to work on that as we scale, whether that's possible.
A series of mini circles.
Yeah. And I think the thing that that we do well, bringing together org psych, culture, all the different pieces, is, you know, we had a town hall a few months ago, and term one for us had been really challenging. We'd returned to delivering workshops and there'd been some challenges. Rather than just getting up there and going, great, we've got the slideshow, we've got the impact stats, here's what's coming up next, we sat in a circle and we said, term one was really challenging. We want to hear what did you really struggle with? And we just went, I think humans are really smart intuitively, and we just trusted our gut and we could feel in the room instinctively there was stuff that wasn't being talked about. And rather than ignore that, as leaders, we said, we want to hear it. Let's talk about it. And it's going to be messy, but we know that if we don't work through this together, we're not going to be able to move forwards. And off the back of that came a whole bunch of projects and initiatives that have now been implemented. So yeah, I'm not sure if that answered your question, but
oh yeah, more than like, answered my question.
There's a few different threads. Yeah, there's a few different threads.
It does, but it speaks to what lies at the heart of great workplace cultures. And you know, it's a very simple answer. It's people who feel trusted and empowered to do the right thing, but also know that if they do the wrong thing, it's an opportunity for learning, not blame, right? Such that we can continue to move in the right direction together and achieve the results for whoever it is we happen to be working for at that time.
Yeah, well summarized.
Thanks to God for that. Matt, there's some brilliant shows. I honestly can't wait to go back and listen to this myself. Obviously, just your audio track. I don't listen to myself. There's so many great shows there for people. I want to say a huge thanks for joining me on the Culture Makers podcast today.
Thank you for having me. Really good to be here.
Thanks so much for listening to the Culture Makers podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to get notified when new episodes are released. If you've been inspired by today's guest, please share the link with your friends, family, or networks. If you'd like to continue your learning journey, then why not join our virtual community of Culture Makers, where our members share ideas to help them get a little bit better every day. You can find out more at www.culturemakers.community.